Hello and welcome to Life and Inside Job, where we adventure into the underground caverns and the hidden delights of the inner world. And today we're talking stuckness. Specifically, feeling stuck in perimenopause. But feeling stuck or frozen, ignored, trapped, dead-ended, stiffed, whatever you call it, however you feel it, is something that we can all relate to. For myself, I felt more kind of desperate, really, in perimenopause, feeling the desperation. But I was stuck. I felt stuck for, you know, from my late 20s through to my late 30s. So it's something I can really relate to. There's quite a lot of conversation about overwhelm from being too busy in perimenopause, but almost none about what it's like when it's not busy enough, except perhaps in our heads, which can be quite chatty. But isn't that interesting that the busyness is accepted, but the lack of busyness, the freeze, is not? Julia Davis is a yoga teacher, she's a friend, she's a mentor and a trainer, and a specialist in women's health, and she's the founder of the marvellous Yoga Teachers Forum, which she talks a little about here. She shares with us her experience of perimenopause and of stuckness in various ways, along with ideas and remedies and tips for getting unstuck. Julia, thank you for coming. I'm really interested in talking to you about this topic because it's not often mentioned. And I don't think, like, hands up, I don't think I'd really thought about it or framed it in this way until we had a conversation on Instagram last month. And you wanted to bring to our attention how we can freeze in perimenopause. Can you tell me more about what that might look like?
So there's a lot of conversation around overwhelm and having too much to do in perimenopause. The archetype that we're seeing a lot of, because there's plenty of people around who are experiencing it, is the sandwich generation with the children and the grandparents or the parents, the busy job, the busy life, the do, and then where is my space for rest? Where is my space to even recognize that this change is happening in my body? And that is very, very valid, and that is a felt experience of a lot of people. But alongside that is the experience of not being busy and not being valued and not being seen and having time. And that's something that I've experienced, and probably because it has been my experience, it's something that I recognize. So the person who is 46 years old and they are experiencing perimenopausal symptoms, they're not even recognizing necessarily, and they're being sidelined in their job. And they're good at it because they're 46 and they've been doing that work for, let's say, 20 years. But they're being sidelined, or they might even be being made redundant. And that might be an experience that a lot of us actually have had now, because we've all experienced lockdown. And some people experience lockdown as a really busy experience with their children climbing all over them. And other people experienced it as a, oh my goodness, I do not have my job anymore. I don't even know who I am now. And actually, people who've experienced that were often the younger generation. They were often people who worked in industries, for instance, like the theatre. I live in London. A lot of people who work in the theatre are very low paid. It's a passion of theirs. And they found themselves, maybe they'd found the job that they actually wanted to do. They'd found, you know, a contract. And then suddenly they weren't on stage anymore and they weren't there. And they weren't being seen. Or there's the indignation of being 25-year-old woman walking down the street and people are catcalling and noticing the beauty of the woman walking down the street. And then a perimenopausal woman, no one's looking and no one's catcalling, no one's really caring, and no one's seeing me anymore.
So what I'm hearing you say is that it's about a sort of loss of identity.
Yeah.
It's a kind of like a too much space.
Yeah.
And it feels a bit like an echoey room, the way you speak about it. How does this contribute to freeze? Why do you call it freeze?
I can't remember where we came from, where that came from, the word freeze, but it was more around the freeze comes from if you've ever been made redundant, then, or if you've ever been in a role, for instance, as a mother, and you've chosen to be at home with your children, and you've done part time this and that, and then suddenly they're at secondary school, they need you less. But then you haven't got a skill set and you don't know how to re-enter the world. So that might be a freeze. So you've got all this value to offer the world because you've got life experience and you have got gifts that you have garnered over the years of your experience, but you don't know how to get back. Or, you know, you've reached a level in your profession. And actually what you really need, you do need a bit of time and space. You don't want to be working from 6 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night, but there might be people around there who will, but you have gravitas and you have experience, but where can you go with that? So you freeze because you're being looked down upon from the people who have been around for less time than you, but you know, other people might see as feeling fresher. And then because you're not seen to be fresh, you don't feel fresh. So, and then you have a hot flush, you know, then you have an experience of, and perimenopause, you know, we talk about the reality. It is real. You know, we are more likely to be stopped in our tracks by our bleed. If we've got a bleed still, it's more likely to stop us in our tracks in perimenopause than it is in the years coming up to that. We are more likely to want to find a word, like, I mean, you said freeze, oh, and I was like, where did that come from? Oh, I remember now. We're more likely to have those moments of lack of clarity. So then alongside other people not seeing us, they've got reasons to, because of things that might come up in our lives and our genuine need for space. I was talking to my brother the other day, and I do believe that the menopause happens in certain ways, obviously very different ways to the menopause. And he was talking about the diversity service, the diversity survey in his business. And he works for a big business. And he looked at the diversity survey, and he's just turned 50. And he said, there was nothing in there, Julia, about age. There was no ageism diversity tick box for me. And the reason why he said that is because there's a vulnerability to being 50, being, you know, kind of tipping over that 50 line. There's a vulnerability in there. It's like, I know I've got experience, but I've got to an age now where I know I've got a level of vulnerability. Because if he didn't feel that, then why would he have said, well, where's the tick box of ageism?
Oh.
You know, and
he's much in there, isn't it?
Of the white, you know, the white privileged man. But he he's aware now that he's probably the one of the first. I mean, we fit into a minority, so we've got some experience of marginality in our lives. But as a well-educated, middle-class, you know, well-established man, for the first time in his life, he was like, "I fit into a category here where I need to be looked after." It was really interesting
and beautiful that he could name his vulnerability in that.
He's my brother, so he could, you know. Aww. I know some people don't have spaces of vulnerability with their siblings, but I think when we're with our siblings, we're more, if we have that kind of relationship, and then we might not have real siblings, we might have siblings in heart, but hopefully we've all got siblings in some way, even if they're not blood relatives, and those are the people that we can.
Our chosen siblings as well.
Exactly, our chosen. I'm just lucky that my two of my chosen siblings are actually relatives.
I kind of fallen in love with them already. What a sweetie! What a complete sweetie. So okay. Another way of saying freeze might be stuckness. So a place where we feel that we don't know where to go, or we feel trapped, or we feel, and the sort of that would include the sort of lack of being seen or discrimination or whatever, but you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, and also what I see a lot of in women my age. I mean, I'm 47, nearly 48, but kind of I'd say like 45 to 55. Like the perimenopause, you know, archetype. Yeah, I know it can happen earlier, it can happen later. My mum was, I think, nearly 60 actually when she finally had her final day. But that idea of needing to re-qualify, and sometimes it can be wonderful to go to university or to study again in your 50s or in your late 40s, but also there's the actually you do have a wealth of experience. And rather than having to go back and learn again, why can't we find a space for this wealth of knowledge to be seen and to be shared?
Now you see, this is really, I get this, I see this all the time. Like you, I mentor complementary therapists and yoga people and that kind of thing, and people come to me and say, oh, do you think I should do this vastly expensive training? Do you think, I don't know, well, should I do this or should I do that vastly expensive training? And I look at them and I think, and I can see they have 20 years of amazing experience and training with fantastic trainers under their belts. And what they need really is the affirmation that they are just so knowledgeable and so brilliant at what they do. But because we feel that, like, the wobble.
Yeah, and actually that does, I mean, I know this is too personal to share, but you can cut it out if I decide later. But I remember actually coming to you and there being a vastly expensive training, and it was just before the Yoga Teachers Forum.
Oh, please tell me I told you not to do it. Did I?
You did.
Yes.
You said.
Thank God for that.
You've been doing that for years. You do know. There you go. Think twice before you do. And then it was really interesting because it was at the stage where the Yoga Teachers Forum, as it is now, was birthing. And I just needed
it. Interesting. Well, let's look at that. I mean, that moment where you could have, you know, you were about to step into this beautiful thing that you've created.
Yeah.
And you could easily have been diverted into down a different line, which who knows what it may have delivered for you. But
well, I think sometimes when we're looking for that kind of thing, what we're looking for is community. Mm-hmm. We're looking to step back into a community. And if you're thinking about things in terms of freeze or in terms of not being seen or being made redundant, I mean, what had happened to me is lockdown had happened and my thriving yoga studio, which had, you know, it was a lovely local small yoga studio, which had, I had 60 people across the week coming in and out, which felt really comfortable and perfect for me. Lockdown ended that quite abruptly, apart from a very few people, because of the way that I'd created it was a safe haven space that was physical, that was not in people's homes, for people at the time of day when their children were supposedly at school, it was a safe haven. It was beautiful space. So it really relied upon the fact that you were not in your own home for that time, so lockdown did not lend itself to it, and so I felt redundant, and then from that I found that this amazing online community existed that I'd been nurturing all along, and there were many people who were part of it who needed that community.
So can you say a bit about the community, about this community that was there all the time?
Well, I run the Yoga Teachers Forum, and the way that it existed before lockdown was monthly meetings in my studio. And actually one of the monthly meetings was one that you ran on menopause, quite a while ago. And it was a huge amount of work to put them together. They were all raising money for charity. And alongside them, I used to do interviews with the people who were running the sessions. And it wasn't about, are you a hugely qualified ex? It was like, do you have a passion? Would you like to share it? Would you like to spend 2 hours with other people who are interested in your passion sharing it? And I'd been doing that for years. And it was a real passion project because there was no, you know, I didn't earn money from it. It was so that I could feel part of the community. And then we had a few paid for events that ran with it. And they were very much heart projects as well. So my colleague, Jenny Stone. I knew that she taught, she'd been teaching yoga for cancer for years, and I'd referred my own clients to her. And so she began teaching teachers that. And then I knew Richard Kravitz well, and actually he's running a yoga for dementia training for us coming forward. And I knew that was something that he shared really beautifully. And so that was one of the yoga for dementia was something that we ran. And I think we already then we were raising money for a dementia charity, and we were raising money for Maggie's alongside paying them for their time. And so it was actually Jenny's Yoga for Cancer was due to happen in March. And so was Richard's, actually. And both of them ended up, rather than running them in person, running them online. And because I had interviewed people on Zoom to let people know about the Teachers Forum events that happened in person, I was one of the few people who actually knew what Zoom was and how it worked, kind of pre-lockdown. So I was like, oh, I've done Zoom before. We'll just go online and do it. And we learned as we went along, and we started from scratch. And then I had one of the monthly sessions was due to happen as well. And I was like, I'm not going to cancel it. And I just spoke to the teacher who was going to run it. And I said, are you happy to still run it? And we had 50, you know, my studio, I think once we did a yoga and sound, and because everyone was giving money to charity and it didn't really matter if we piled on top of each other, and it was pre-lockdown, I think we had 18 people kind of piled on top of each other doing sound work. But my studio really takes 12 comfortably, really no more than that, and in lockdown probably 5 comfortably. So to have about 50 yoga teachers all gathering for mutual support when many of our lives were imploding was really special. And the Yoga Teachers Forum's built from there. And now there's a really beautiful cohort of teachers that are part of the forum. And I know you'll love this. We have gatherings now of the teachers. And the way that we do it is around the circle way. Mm-hmm. You know, this, you know, so we kind of try and sit in circle, and we try and have a different person holding the space and give space for people to talk and be heard. And the way that we interact as teachers together is the way many of our trainings work as well, which is quite different to maybe some other people's training, is that it's about creating space for the people who are participating to be heard. Like you say, a lot of people think, oh, I need more and more training. It's actually about them sitting with the knowledge that they have and finding how it relates to what we're talking about in that moment, so they can go, ah, okay, I don't need someone. You know, you can learn extra knowledge, and it is important to, it can be helpful to, but often all the people who are part of the Teachers Forum are qualified yoga teachers. They're teaching already, so they will have a skill set that they own, and reminding people of what they already have can be really helpful, because what one person have is very different to what someone else has. So for me, I know I come across as very woo and active and loud and it there, but my teaching is often very still and meditative, and you could use the word restorative. So that's the direction that a lot of my teaching go. But there could be someone teaching a very similar demographic to me, but their energy is different and their skill set is different. And that doesn't mean that their skill set is better or worse, sort of. It's just different. It relates to who they are as a person. So who am I to prescribe how they should teach once they've learned the basics? That it's not my job.
Absolutely. And I think I'm doing some training at the moment. So this is, and I'm kind of wrestling with, so how do I, why am I here? What is this about? How do I use it personally? And how do I integrate this in? So this is very alive for me at the moment. And yeah, the only way it can make sense is for me to apply, do exactly as you're talking about so articulately. It's really, I didn't expect this to be so therapeutic.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's pretty good. The only way I can make it useful is to take what I'm learning and apply it directly into my offerings. and go, oh, so what happens with that? And what does that look like? And, you know, it's kind of like, it's like Play-Doh, really.
Yeah. I think you get bored. If what we taught was prescriptive, you'd get bored with the content. You know, yeah. It's like every class I teach is different. It depends on how people, you know, I mean, you know how I teach my yoga classes. It's like we arrive, we settle, and then we share what season we're in or how we're feeling. And that sets the tone of however that class is going to be. So every class is different, which is why I'm always just so in love with my classes.
Yeah. And here we are, we're very in a very unstuck place. So
yeah.
Really stuck out for me from what you said was in your situation in lockdown, and also in the way that you describe Yoga Teachers Forum, is that it's reminding us of what we already have. So you already have that community.
Yeah, and some of us, with the stuckness, some of us don't, because if you've stepped out of a world and then you don't know how to step back into it, or you don't want to step back into it, but you don't know where to step into, I do think that can really happen in perimenopause, and finding ways and spaces to support people through that can be really powerful. So, you know, my experience is with yoga. So there might be somebody who, you know, had a really, really tricky perimenopause experience and maybe lost their job during perimenopause and maybe didn't know where they were, maybe even had, you know, some kind of a burnout situation. And then how can we help people find themselves in that? And you're not necessarily going to solve everyone's problems in that, but if we can find a place for us to have community, however that is, that's really, really valuable, because there's a reason why perimenopause women are prescribed antidepressants. And often that has got to do with not necessarily overwhelm, but like a feeling of, you know, depression's inertia, isn't it? That depression connects to freeze, and doctors don't have time. But I mean, obviously there's the massive mistake or the difficulty of being prescribed antidepressants when there are hormonal things going on, but that's not my remit, and I don't believe it's your remit either. Neither of us are doctors. And now there are brilliant tools out there which look at the hormones. But when it's a feeling, community is necessary. And I think community is necessary for all of us anyway, regardless of whether we're introvert or extrovert. Community is irrelevant to that. It's about connection and having space to be heard and also to hear. So one of my students, she wrote, there's a book called The Menopause Monologues. I don't know whether you've heard of The Menopause Monologues.
I contributed to The Menopause Monologues, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, the second one, yeah.
The second one. I haven't read the second one. I was like, I'm sure I would have noticed. Yeah. I would have, because they don't use the name of the person.
What's her name?
I'm sure I would have
recognized.
Let's
name her, Thingy Powell.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Oh, is it Victoria?
No.
Or have I made that up?
I'll stick it.
Yeah, because the first book's red and the second book's blue.
Yeah,
and
I'm blue.
Yeah, and I haven't read the blue one. I'm ready
far
to read
superior.
Because one of my students was in the red one, and I love that book because it's people shared experience. And I love that some of them are one paragraph long. Yes, perimenopause happened. And I'm fine, and I'm loving life. And then others are long. And actually, one of the really sad things about the first one is that there are a number of women who share their experience who were misdiagnosed and misdirected and not held or supported. I'm hoping book two is a little bit more upbeat. And also, I think a lot has happened in the last 10 years. And there is more support. I'd even forgotten that menopause used to be called the change. I'd forgotten that terminology. And it's quite funny, I was on holiday recently and I saw the vagina monologues. I was in Madeira and I saw the vagina monologues in Portuguese. I didn't watch it, but I saw it. I just thought, oh, how interesting that that's happening now. And so maybe, because I think the vagina monologues were about 15 years ago. I think that might
longer,
be when I...
No,
or it was even longer.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's where they are in Portugal at the moment with this world. And I'd recently taught somebody who was in Hong Kong on our perimenopause training. And it's really interesting when you look at different cultures and where they are around talking about life changes and talking about the body. And you know, I think it's wonderful that wonderful to some extent that there are programs like sex education out there. I was not impressed with the way that birthing as a 48-year-old woman was dealt with. I thought that could have been done very, very differently, and it could have been done in the most empowering and amazing way. But there are a lot, you know, I think most people know what a vulva is now, which is a good thing.
Which is a massive step forward.
It is. And there's a lot that's out there that is a huge step forward.
So back to being stuck again. I keep pulling us back in. No, we don't want to talk about being stuck, because it's a universal human experience and it's really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah, you see, it isn't talked about, is it? It's all the busy. All I hear about is we haven't got time. No one can rest. Everyone's burnt out.
Because being busy has a higher status than being stuck.
Yeah. I've had chronic illness in my life. So I've had moments throughout my life where I've had to stop. And I've had to make choices in my life around my energy levels. And actually, I've had beautiful conversations with Fiona Agonbar about that, who runs our long COVID training, because she had chronic fatigue. So she's also got that shared experience. So I think because I've had that experience of needing to stop and having to have, you know, start from the slow to the big, even from the age of 20, I was making career choices based on my energy levels rather than on my ability. That really resonates with me, because I'm someone who can get a lot done. You know what I'm like, okay, I can be really well, just get it. But then there's something which is very like perimenopause that is a break, because my body doesn't coincide with what I might like to do. Even though I feel like I am an embodied person, I'm an embodied person who has that nick in my system that I've got the mind of a racer and the body of a tortoise, and my tortoise body pulls me back. And that's kind of what perimenopause does to a lot of people. They were able to be on the fast track and then suddenly they're drawn back, and then the world is telling them at the same time, yep, you're not worth it anymore. Nope, you're not going to fit in that dress anymore. I'm not wolf whistling you. Or, you know, you were meant to be valued as a, you know, all those years you were meant to be valued as a mother, well, you didn't even manage to become a mother. Who are you? I mean, that's really rude, but that is what people sometimes hear. So it could be somebody who's had the most amazing career and created so much, and then they need to slow down, or they're made redundant after having, you know, really proven themselves. And other people we feel like we're being looked at in a certain way. Or on the other side, you could have been somebody who made a choice or had a choice made for you. Often when people have their second child, they have a choice made for them because they can't afford childcare. And then they've got the opportunity to be made redundant. And that horrible word. And because balancing two children or three children and a job is really hard, they make that choice not knowing how it's going to feel 10 years down the line when they want to make a different choice.
I think innate in all of this is a giant paradox. this is giant mother of all paradoxes, because the way I conceive perimenopause is as a time of kind of undoing, of lifting the lid on what we've been desperately trying to stuff back in the dustbin all our life because it's not pretty and we don't want it. So it's a time of reflection. It's often a time when wounds, emotional wounds from the past will emerge for healing.
Yes.
To be for completion.
Yes.
And when people come to me, which they do in perimenopause years, and say, I'm feeling stuck, I don't know what to do, I've got these three business options and blah, 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 this training, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, menopause is asking you to stop.
Yeah.
And yet stuckness requires something. So what as humans, what we tend to do is if we're stuck, we want to move. I don't like it. I'm going to do that moving thing. We want to move, but actually what menopause requires is that we hold that stuckness, I think, tenderly, because it's a place of undoing. To get very busy and moving into in a right brain kind of logical kind of place, how can I say, is not necessarily going to be helpful.
Yeah, you can't absolutely. And that's the thing. That's why it relates so well to burnout or to chronic illness. Because what happens with chronic illness is that you feel a bit better and then you go for it and then you crash. It's like you go up, 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 crash, up, 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 crash. And you've got to find a way to move, but slowly enough not to crash. So it's about, how do you get out of bed? If you're thinking about how do you get out of bed without deciding to go for a 10k run and then crash again? Or if a 10k run's easy for you, get out of bed, go for a marathon. So that's a lesson that I've been learning my entire life, and I've been failing at my entire life. I have had many a time where I've ridden the roller coaster and it has not worked out okay for me. And perimenopause is a time where I almost feel like my contemporaries are catching up, and some won't. I know someone who's well past their menopause and they never got tripped. They've had plenty of trips, but the physical impact of menopause was not one of those. And there will be people that, there's always people around, there's always the person that we can look at and goes, how on earth? They'll always have something else going on. Everyone's always got something going on, but many more of us will have reason to be tripped. That's why, that's why there's that beautiful pause in the word menopause and perimenopause. There's pause. Because
should we rename it menostuck?
Well, we could, but pause. I love the word pause. There's a beautiful podcast called The Pause. I really recommend it. It's the On Being podcast has got an extra little bit called The Pause.
All right.
And it's very different. A pause is really different to being stuck. Pause gives us the opportunity, like you say, to look and to be. So, for instance, I'm experiencing the heavy bleeds of perimenopause. It's one of the most archetypal, people like to call it symptoms. I like to call it something else. I can't think of a word that isn't that at the moment. And I talk about it. I talked about it in my class this morning. And one of my students, we had a little menopause chat this morning. And I had somebody in their 30s, someone who'd experienced menopause. I had a couple of people who were perimenopausal, and I had a man in the class as well. So it's like, there was a real variety of people there, and we were having a conversation within the class. It's an hour and a half class. So there's room for a bit of chat. And what one of them said was, your experience is this and you can see it. And I couldn't see it. It's like, and that's when it's really hard. So we can experience freeze and then we can see it for what it is. Or, I mean, actually, it's ironic that I've had freeze at moments in my life all the way through, and now I'm really busy, and now I'm, you know, in a time where I might need more pause. So what do I do about that? But I'm seeing it. I'm going to make my mistakes along the way, and it can be scary as well. I mean, I teach perimenopause yoga alongside Jane Dancy, who is, we're always expecting to be beyond menopause, but every kind of, you know, 200 days she has a bleed or whatever, it never quite gets there. But one of the reasons we both like to do it is because when you're in it, you're experiencing it. And sometimes when something's over, you can't remember it as well. So, you know, if I speak to people who no longer have periods, sometimes they can't remember bits of what it was like. Mm. And it's nice to be in it. And I sometimes it's a bit scary teaching perimenopause as a perimenopausal woman, because who knows what's going to come up for me. That's why I really would never do it on my own. I wouldn't do it with somebody if I didn't have a partner to teach it with who was further along the line than me. Even though you can teach what you haven't experienced, because I've got, you know, I know a lovely male pregnancy teacher. There aren't many around, and I also know pregnancy teachers who haven't given birth yet. They're just going to teach differently when they've given birth. But it's you know, there's something about seeing your experience. It's like, until you know, and it's amazing how we need to be told, but until you know about the fluctuations of the menstrual cycle, you can go years without seeing it. It's like, it's obvious that the bleed time is a time where you might need more rest. It's obvious to me now, as from my lived experience, that ovulation is a time of woohoo and maybe a little bit of too much woohoo. But I genuinely went years without seeing that. So people will be having that experience everywhere around perimenopause, especially when there's the rhetoric around it is, who can fix me? Who external to me can be responsible for my experience or responsible for somehow fix? It's like that song, I love Coldplay, but the song Fix Me or Fix You, it's like, how can I fix you? It's like, that's, I'm going to be what my children call sexist. Mum, you're so sexist. It's like, I think it could be a very masculine trait to fix. But I might be wrong. I'm sure there's lots of, you know, not necessarily, but that whole, how can I fix you? How can I fix you, perimenopausal woman? How can I fix you, menopausal woman? Well, maybe that's not the right word. How can I own my experience as someone who's experiencing perimenopause? And how can somebody else help me do that? And my goodness, I'm not saying I want to go it alone. You know, that you've been an amazing mentor to me, Kate, in the changes that have happened in my life. So we're not expecting ourselves to go alone, but there's something about owning our own experience. And those experiences being difficult. And when we get to our age, it's like when you get to the age of about 30, you start to realize how many people around us have had baby loss, or, you know, and until that stage, you've probably spent your life asking stupid questions like, so when, that kind of thing. And then as soon as you know that that's a lived experience of many, many people, you stop asking those questions that could be really hurtful to someone. And it's the same when we get to, you know, this beautiful portal, which is perimenopause. When you see it, there's you know, you talked about gentleness, taking the time to stop, caring. We need that.
So I'm going to try now and name the different gentle ways that we can support ourselves when we're feeling this stuckness. So there's owning our experience,
which
you've just been talking about, and I think also trying to name it, and this is name it, but without blame, without self-blame.
Yeah.
I think that's a process, but being able to, saying I'm stuck is a good start. Saying I'm stuck and I still love myself is something else entirely, because typically we heap opprobrium on ourselves.
Yeah.
We've named,
and you often see that when people get divorced in perimenopause, you see them blaming themselves for circumstances that, you know, you wouldn't dream of doing that if you weren't the person who was blaming themselves.
Yeah, I agree. There's community.
Yeah.
Coming together.
Yeah.
What else have I missed?
I think there's a level, I mean, I would teach yoga, so I would go to the embodiment, and that's where sometimes it can be really helpful to have support, because
okay, hang on, I'm going to pause you there, Julia. A little pause. What can you say for people what embodiment means for somebody who might not be familiar with that term?
Yeah, so in the perimenopause training that Jane and I run, the yoga teachers, we talk about the social, spiritual, and the embodied aspect as well. So physical. That's what. So there's physical, spiritual. I wish I had it in front of me. And emotional and social.
Mm.
And the physical, it can be really helpful. So physical might be just noticing what's happening with our breath in certain situations.
Mm.
And then in community, finding practices, and often community can really help. So the reason why we like to teach yoga teachers is because they have an opportunity to be in community with others. And when you practice very simple breathing practices in community, the experience is very different to practicing breathing practices on your own.
Mm.
And the same with the physical. So there's physical as in noticing how you're feeling. And in community, you can make choices. So it can be really interesting to, for instance, be in a class situation where somebody feels powerful enough in their own body to make a choice to do something different to the other people. So an example of that is that I was teaching a practice today which involved squatting, to, you know, like coming down, and there was one person in the class who couldn't do the practice in the same way as other people. And I felt that it was lovely that she could feel safe enough in that class to do something different. And she was given a choice and shown to do that. And she enjoyed it and didn't feel different. And then there was another point in the class where we were doing a seated practice that involved a balance, which for some was really comfortable and gorgeous. It's like, somebody called it the cosmic egg. It's like a little seated practice and you can find a point of balance and it can feel delicious. And there were two people in the class who didn't find it delicious, and there was not another opportunity to lie down. And then there was a third chance in the class, and we did a humming practice. And humming can be so gorgeous. And there was one person, we often share afterwards, because then we know how people experience something. And then if someone didn't have a good experience, then we can unpack it as a group, if it can work that way. And one person said, oh, I loved it. And then I gave permission not to hum. And so one person said, I didn't hum and I loved it. And then I felt a bit guilty for loving it because I wasn't one of the hummers. So we unpacked that. And then there was somebody else who said, well, I was humming, but I felt like I was holding the humming. And then it was like, well, you know, that was my job to hold the humming because I was facilitating the group. So if anyone was holding the space and should feel responsible for it, it should be me. So it was lovely to hear them, because there was one person who was experiencing the joy of a practice that they weren't doing, but they felt a level of guilt because they were enjoying it and not participating. And there was someone else who was like, I feel like I was holding the group, whereas it wasn't their responsibility to do that. And then we can go into our own lives and go, oh, okay, so where in our lives do we enjoy things and feel guilty about it? Where in our lives do we hold space for others when they don't necessarily need to be held? And actually, it's not always a woman who is holding the space. It wasn't necessarily, you know, like, it doesn't need to be the perimenopausal woman who's having that, but that can be a very strong experience of a perimenopausal woman. And actually, one of the things I learned in lockdown, and my partner was actually around for the first time, it felt like the first time in forever, was, oh, he's quite good at this. I'm going to let him be really good at this. And then sometimes I feel really jealous because he's really good at it and I'm not doing it as much anymore. But the balance is actually better for everyone because when you're carrying the can the whole time, you can't do other things. So I couldn't set up the yoga teachers forum before because I was carrying the can. And now we've learned how to balance things more because lockdown happened and we realized that, you know, that allowed the balance to change. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got two more on our list for things to try when you're stuck. One is choosing pleasure.
Yes. Yes.
And the other is putting down the can.
Pleasure is so important. And pleasure, it was another thing that came out of class this morning. It's like, this is why I love teaching. One of my students, I hope they don't mind sharing this, but one of my students has got a little boy. And she was talking about the walk to school. She goes, the walk to school just takes forever because he's always going, oh, look at this leaf. And I just felt like I had a huge affinity with this little boy because I am a look at this leaf person. And we talked about where we derive pleasure. And I really massively derive pleasure from looking at trees. Autumn's my favourite season. I could stand in front of my favourite tree or walk around it if it's too cold and go, wow, look at the red. Oh my goodness, look at the green. Oh my, like, I literally have like palpitations about the joy of how beautiful this season is. Whereas there are other people who would need in perimenopause to go for a run. And they do outside in the open air. I think autumn's one of the best times to go for a run because you don't get too hot. And they just need to, and they'll derive the same joy as I get from staring at a leaf. Sorry, guys. From running out the anger that they might be experiencing in perimenopause. And you talked about self-recrimination. There can also be a lot of recrimination to others. It's like, how dare they make me redundant? How dare they not see me as a beautiful person and expect me to change the way I look or colour my hair or look a certain way? And if we can, you know, if we can turn anger into pleasure, how might that be? You
know? Smoking hot, I would say.
Yeah.
Julia, can we close, please, with your top tip for a wonderful inside life, an enriched, gorgeous, pleasurable inside life?
I think that the answer to that question is, remember that Kate's going to ask.
Everybody hates it. I feel like the evil trickster every time I spring this old chestnut on it.
A top tip for inside life. is to give ourselves the opportunity to notice the changes that are happening, and to then we're more likely to find pleasure even in the pain and in the challenge, because we can see it and it's like, thank goodness I am experiencing this consciously.
And how do you do that? How do you give yourself the opportunity to notice?
How do I do that?
Can you give me an example?
So I would say, if you're thinking about from the perspective of somebody who isn't on any kind of hormonal contraception and they're going through perimenopause, enjoying the differences that occur in the bleed and knowing that that can be massively challenging, but knowing that if we weren't watching it, we'd be experiencing it in a much more shocking way. And maybe for somebody who isn't experiencing natural reason, someone who's for instance, on the merino coil or something like that, when you experience something that feels out of the ordinary in the perimenopause journey, knowing that there's almost like an expectation. It's like, oh, okay, so this is how I'm experiencing this. Like, oh, I've forgotten what that word is. Well, I'm naming that and I'm with it and I'm owning it. Mm. And I have some knowledge around it as well. There are so many people who are scared of various things, so they won't look at it. And then sometimes when you look, by the time you've looked at it, it's a little bit too late, or there's, you know, it would have been nice to have looked at it earlier. So that's what I mean, is kind of being with it, experiencing it, and then if it's something that's not okay, you can do something about it from a place of ownership rather than a place of fear. Owning our experience, however it might pan out.
Powerful stuff. Thank you so much, Julia.
You're welcome.
Sharing your expertise, your professional expertise, but also yourself and your journey with being stuck in different ways. And I find that so touching and so heartening that you bring all of yourself to this conversation about perimenopause. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find Julia at yogateachersforum.org or at finchleyyoga.com. That's where her classes are. And do pop over to Instagram at kate_codrington. And let me know what you have in your toolbox for when you feel stuck. How do you get out of it? What kind of emotional plunger do you use? I bet you have some fabulous ideas and remedies for that. This podcast is done absolutely out of love and really just for the fun of it. So I get to have these fascinating conversations with people who otherwise just wouldn't have time. You know, we don't have time for these long conversations anymore. And there's no money involved at all. So it would be wonderful if you could support these conversations and explorations and affirmations of the internal life by sharing this episode or other episodes you've enjoyed with a friend or with you, your community. I would really appreciate that. And you can join me next week for another exciting voyage. And we're going to be in further into the wibbly world of perimenopause.